And now, coming to you from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting throughout the multiverse, the Nine Realms, Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, Nidavellir, basically anywhere that has the internet, really, we proudly present Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 210, and we are still the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, and we're coming at you, as always, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where the weather's been really nice over the last week. I can't really say much more about it, but it's been really gorgeous out, and we're getting into that kind of fall weather pattern, and I'm looking forward to it, yeah! Looking forward to getting outside and doing stuff outside because it's actually cool enough now that I would actually want to, unlike some of the dog days of summer, as it were. Quick shout out here to Elvis Lee Thomas, who is the latest member of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group, our 70th member. Woo! Yeah, it took us forever to get there because, you know, we'd get to 68, 69, and then somebody would leave, and then somebody would come in, and then, yeah. So welcome, Elvis, and welcome along. And hope you enjoy the show. And, of course, feel free to chime in wherever you want. And you can also chime in if you're out there listening and you're not part of our Facebook group or one of our Twitter followers. You can join us on the Twitter, at Radio Free Asgard is our name over there. And you can email the show if you want to. And the email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And we don't really have a whole lot to talk about here at the top of the show. Not a whole lot going on here. But we do have an issue of Thor to cover. So why don't we just go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and we are looking this week at Thor, number 6, May 2015, cover date. Cover art is by Russell Dowderman and shows a silhouette thingy of Girl Thor's head, and inside we have images of all of the various people who could possibly be Girl Thor. I guess that's what they're intending here. So we've got all these female characters, and some of them I recognize, most of them I recognize, and some of them I don't. But we have, looks like one of the Valkyries and the Black Widow, and we have the Girls of Thunder, and we have Jane Foster, and we have Captain Marvel, the Scarlet Witch, looks like Lorelei, the Enchantress, I think that's Roz Solomon, Sif, Freya, the Valkyrie, Angela, and in the middle of them is a kind of weird, sullen-looking Loki, and a nice enough cover there. And let's open up to the opening page. A new Thor has risen. After Thor, Odin's son, found himself no longer worthy of wielding Mjolnir, a mysterious woman was able to lift the enchanted hammer and became the new goddess of thunder. So far, she has taken down evils great and small, bolstered by the new legitimacy of Thor, Odin's son, officially passing the name of Thor onto her. Evils like the villainous Roxxon CEO, part-time Minotaur, Dario Egger, and the dark elf, sorcerer, Malekith. Well, actually, they haven't been taken down, anyway. Not yet, anyway. While Odin's son may have given Thor his name, he hasn't given up on discovering what her true name is, and Odin the All-Father hasn't either. Offended at this affront to his omnipotence, the All-Father has called into service his brother, Kul Borson, as well as that Asgardian weapon known as the Destroyer. He is determined to either learn the identity of this new Thor, or destroy her in the process. And the title of the story, Who Holds the Hammer? Jason Aaron was the writer, Russell Dowderman the artist, Matthew Wilson is the colorist, VC's Joe Sabino is the letter and production person. Dowderman and Wilson were, of course, the cover artists, and then we have another variant cover artist that we don't care about. John Boyesan is the assistant editor. Will Moss is the editor. Axel Alonso is the editor-in-chief. Joe Quesada is the chief creative officer. Dan Buckley is the publisher. And Alan Fine is the executive producer. Thor created by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby. And we open up to our beginning of the story here, and we get a little bit of an origin here for the Minotaur. And this is the first time we've gotten kind of a glimpse at the past of this character. And he's telling a story here, and it's beautifully drawn, I'll have to say. We'll talk about the art, of course, at the end. My father was a fairly wealthy man. He owned his own island in the Aegean Sea, where we'd spend our family holidays. My father and mothers, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, cousins galore, they all died screaming on that island, all but me. And it shows these armed guards, and they're in the mansion, and you can see kind of blood splattered around. One's getting away! It's just a boy, and there's nowhere for him to run. The island is ours. The pirates came during the night, what would prove to be the longest night of my life. I was 9 years old. Come on, let's enjoy ourselves. We'll kill him in the morning. And he goes and runs off from the house, and he's hiding in a cave. I had never prayed before. I had never seen it done. But I prayed that night. I prayed for death and power and revenge. I prayed until my bones ached and my eyes bled. I prayed the whole night through. And sometime in the early morning, you have him still huddling in the cave. Damn cave is like a labyrinth. I see him. He's over there. Shoot him and let's eat breakfast. And he says, my prayer was answered. But it wasn't the voice of God I heard ringing in my ears. And we see that his eyes are glowing. And they draw it here. It's like the glow from his eyes is going through his hands. And it actually looks really awesome. What's that? What's the top of his head? Looks almost like... And he's obviously changed into the Minotaur. He's like, roar! And we see this kind of Greek-style statue of a bull-headed man in the background. It was a roar, he says. A roar I eventually realized was coming from my own lips. And I expect you've been roaring ever since, haven't you, Mr. Agar? From time to time. But you didn't kill the pirates. No. I decided I liked them better alive. More or less. And we are in some sort of secret meeting room in Roxxon, and we see the pirates and their heads, anyway, are being kept alive in these jars of goop. It's kind of connected by like a tether to these jars. And now how he preserved them when he was 9 years old and half tired and dead on this island, I don't know. So this doesn't make any sense. But it's a very, I would say, a very Preacher kind of moment for those of you who are big fans of the Preacher series. It's very much in that kind of vein. And one of the heads is like, please kill me. And Malekith is like, it must be ludicrously expensive to keep them this way. I applaud your commitment to sadism, sir. But I wonder if you're truly prepared for the consequences of your little bargain in that cave. That was a very old and very angry god to whom you sold your soul. My father owned an island. I own a world. That's the only consequence I'm interested in. Ah, but I don't believe one world will ever be enough for you, will it, Dario Agar of Roxxon? Is it enough for you, Malekith? War is a hungry beast, and I only wish to keep it well fed. What is it you think you're doing by telling me all of this? If you were hoping to intimidate me, I'm afraid you'll need more than just some heads and a horned god. And Agar speaks here. The skull of the Frost Giant King. The one you tried to steal from me. It's yours, to do with as you please. And dare I ask what you want in return? Asks Malekith. Your realm, Svartalfheim. I'm told it's a world of swamps and spooky forests. Yes. Swamps as big as seas, all teeming with bog bears, muck sharks, and quicksand squids. I'm not interested in your wildlife, only in what it becomes once it's been decomposing for a few million years. Tell me, King Malekith, do elves ever drill for oil? And then we shift scenes to Asgardia, and we shift over there, and it looks very much like the movie Asgard. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here in this issue that are, it's rather much like the movies here. So yeah, we're getting a definite sense of that in the art style here in this book. And we see Thor, and he's at the edge of the Rainbow Bridge, and who should be there but the Guardian of the Rainbow Bridge himself. And Heimdall is standing there, and he looks pretty cool, actually. He's got this sort of Kirby-esque gloves and his hornet helmet, and he's standing there with his sword, looking very Idris Elba. And this is the real Thor here. "You must have seen something," he says. "You are Heimdall, all-seeing Guardian of the Bifrost. Those eyes of yours can see everything that moves anywhere upon the world tree. I bet if I asked what the sea elves of Alfheim were having for dinner this evening, you could answer me without pause. Starfish souffle. A bit undercooked for my taste. So how is it you haven't yet seen the face of she who holds Mjolnir? As I have respectfully reminded the Allfather himself in recent days, I am not now, nor have I ever been omniscient. I cannot see all things at once. My sworn duty is to espy only that which threatens this realm. This new goddess of thunder, whoever she may be, does not strike these eyes as a threat. I would not have given her my name if I had thought otherwise, but I still must know who she is, and why she is worthy when I am not. She is someone I already know, of that I am certain, someone who knows me well. As someone else who knows you well, my prince, might I suggest with all due respect that you focus less on her worthiness and more on your own? There it is. There is thy piercing gaze I know so well. The way you just stared into me. Look now at her. That is all I ask. Look and tell me what you see." "You wish to know what I see?" says Heimdall. And we get a close-up of Heimdall's face here, and he's got his glowy eyes, and they're all full of galaxies and shit, and it's very, very, very cool. "I see Malekith forging dark packs that endanger every realm. I see trolls still hiding on Midgard, the same trolls who reduced the town of Broxton to smoke and rubble. I see a serpent let loose in heaven, a brother in turmoil, a sister in peril. Strife between a mother and father that may consume us all. I see bonfires burning as rises a queen of fire. I see a king who waits in hell to be reborn. I see wars, Odinson, more wars than we could possibly endure." And Thor sighs. "I forget which is made of Uru, my friend, my arm or your head. Have it your way, noble Heimdall. Ready the Rainbow Bridge," and we see the Rainbow Bridge kind of unfurling in a way that I've never seen it before, and it looks just freaking awesome. I have to say that a lot of Dauterman's art is very, very cool. And Thor is like, "Find Odin's son, some of these trolls." And we cut to Earth, and we find the trolls, and there's a bunch of trolls. They're hiding underground, deep in the heart of Texas. And so Thor has waded in, or Odin's son, whatever you want to call him, has waded into this group of trolls, and he's in there with his axe, and he's hacking them all up, and he's kind of monologuing to himself as he is smashing them and cutting them up with his axe and knocking them all down. "Brunhild. It must be Brunhild. The new Thor has blonde hair and fights like a Valkyrie, so who else could she be but the hammer could alter her appearance, as it once did mine. Change her hair color, or it must be Sif, after all. No one else could wield Mjolnir with such power, and... Or could it be my sister, Angela? Or perhaps even... Damn it all to hell! Who is she? I must know!" And the trolls are like, "I have no idea what you're talking about!" And we then cut to the moon, and Thor is on the moon. And it turns out that it is the blue area of the moon, and I wasn't really sure about that, but that's the case. And he's standing there at the place where the hammer had dropped. "The hammer lay here on this very spot. So whoever lifted it was someone who could walk freely upon the moon. Thus, it must have been a god." "Nay, you fool. This is the blue area of the moon where the Watcher once lived. Through some scientific wizardry, there is air here, as there has always been. So it could have been anyone, even a human. Anyone who had access to... Bah! If the Watcher was not dead, he could tell me. Yet another reason to curse Nicholas Fury. Fury in his damned whisper. Why can I not unhear what it was said? His words cannot be true. If true, then there is no hope for... And a kind of voice comes from behind him. And it turns out to be Volstagg.
I can come back later, Odin's son, if thou art too busy yelling to thyself on the moon.
Unless you are here to tell me the name of the woman beneath Thor's helmet, I care not what you have to say, Senator Volstagg.
Alas, I cannot aid you in your quest, Odin's son. I know not who she is, but I am afraid. I'm afraid I know who next you need to see, and it might be best if you were to hurry.
And we then shift scenes yet again, and we are back in Asgard, and the Asgardian Hall of Medicine. So we have Thor here and one of the healers. They have that weird oozy shit coming out of their hair or their head. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure if it's something you're wearing or something that's growing out of them. When did it happen, healer? Says Thor.
She collapsed earlier today in the midst of a congressional session.
I thought her condition had been much improved as of late.
I'm afraid not, my prince. I fear it has only worsened in recent weeks, ever since she came to Asgardia to join the Congress of Worlds.
Which was my doing. What more can be done for her here?
Much. The mystic healers of Asgard are skilled in all manner of restorative arts. But, as ever, the patient refuses our suggested treatments, anything she deems too damned magical. We are left to employ only the basest, most primitive Midgardian medicine, which in her case seems to have lost all effectiveness for reasons I cannot explain.
I will speak with her, says Thor.
And so they go in, and of course, you know, they go into Nurse Foster, and she's laying there in her Asgardian bed, and she's got these, like, big spotlight things behind her, and there's somebody there with the IV bag, and yeah, they're just kind of there, and Thor's there by her bedside.
Nurse, tell me the truth. Is there really a shirtless thunder god standing in front of me, or have I died and gone to Valhalla?
Jane Foster, this is no time for jests, says Thor.
On the contrary, as a doctor, I always prescribe a daily dose of jests for all of my patients.
Yes, but this time you are the patient, an obstinate one at that, from what I'm told.
It's the cancer that's being a bit obstinate, but the chemo will work. We just have to give it more time.
I'm afraid the healers do not share your optimism. If you would only allow them to...
The healers are gods. They underestimate the stubbornness of humans when it comes to dying. And besides, I survived dating you, didn't I? I survived trolls, supervillains, civil wars, your brother, your dad. After all that, you think I'm going to let some little lump in my breast be the thing that takes me down?
Sometimes even a whisper can fell a god, says Thor. Be not prideful, Jane Foster, not at a time like this. I beg you. Let the healers do all they can to make you well.
We've done this dance before, and I still haven't changed my mind. Magic always comes with a price, doesn't it? Or have you always had a metal arm and I never noticed?
The arm is the least of what I have lost. I will not lose you as well.
No, you won't. Please tell me you're not really calling yourself Odin's son. You're so much more than just your father's child. I hope you know that.
Once you are well, you may call me whatever you like.
I'm going to remember you said that, Lord Thunderbritches.
And you know, she's out of bed and giving Thor a hug. And then the nurse slash doctor comes and leads her away. And Thor kind of looks longingly after her. And he pulls out the list. And you know, the list he had of all the names. And he scratches her name off of the list. And circles another name, Roz Solomon. And so we then shift scenes once again, and we are back on Earth in the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, which looks very different in this comic than it did in the other last time we saw it, and also in the Avengers movies. And he's there visiting Agent Coulson. I'm pretty sure there's no goats allowed in here, says Coulson. Could you at least tell it to stop growling at me like that?
Tooth gnasher, do not eat Agent Coulson, unless he refuses to be of assistance.
And Coulson is tip-tapping on a computer, and you see Tooth gnasher is going grr at Coulson.
Yeah, about that.
We have no idea who she is. All we have on the new Thor are these few images from various security cameras and satellites. So far, that's not enough to identify her from our facial database. You can see there's like panels from different issues kind of pasted up here. Our analysts do have some suspects, of course, but nothing conclusive. We're actually kind of hoping you could tell us who she is. And Thor gets pissed off at that, and he takes his axe and he smashes the control panel with a gong! If you need some time to think about it, that's cool too. Where is Agent Solomon? Shouts Thor. Agent Solomon? And the computer, not quite broken enough yet, comes up with, Rosalind Solomon, Agent E-213, Environmental Investigation Team, Security Level 5. Roz had a bit of a rough go during the fight with the trolls in Broxton. She's been on leave for a few weeks while she... Wait a minute. You don't think she's the...
Where is Agent Solomon right now?
We could probably call her. You want to call her? Let's call her. And so we have Coulson in the car, you know, one of these flying car things. Agent Solomon, this is Shield Control. Come in, please. And we shift scenes again, and we are back on Roxxon's floating island thingy, and we're in the office of Dario Agger, and he has made a deal with Malekith, and he's saying, it would appear we have a deal. Roxxon will receive the mineral rights to all realms you conquer from now until the end of time.
And I will receive the skull of the King of the Giants without the bother of having to murder your entire company. Make it so. Let the empires of Roxxon and Svartalfheim be as one. I'll have my legal department draw up the papers. And I'll have my goblin mages brew a potion of blood binding.
Just so you're clear, if you attempt to double-cross me in any way, says Agger, I will have your entire race wiped from existence.
And if I become unsatisfied with our arrangement at any point in time, I will personally feed your giblets to my dogs.
Pleasure doing business with you, King Malekith.
The pleasure is all mine, Sir Minotaur. And they have a couple wine glasses, and they clink them together.
And then we get a call over the intercom. Mr. Agger, sir, this is the Surveillance Center. I'm sorry to interrupt your meeting, but it appears we have an intruder. Motion sensors picked up something along the roof of Tower 5. Penthouse Kill Team Delta is responding now.
Well, what are they seeing?
Nothing yet, sir. We can't even tell how many intruders there are. We're having a bit of a hard time getting a lock on the signal. There seems to be some sort of electrical interference. Must be this freak thunderstorm that just sprung up out of nowhere. But we're working to...
Wait, did you say thunderstorm?
Target sighted! Open fire! And we don't see what happens, and they're shooting at something, because there's this bolts of lightning coming out with a thakakoo! And there's a big old explosion, and there's like bullets flying through the air, and they're firing all these bullets, and they're just bouncing off Girl Thor, and... She's standing there, and they're all bouncing off of her, and you see the flattened bullets kind of flying around. And she's thinking to herself,
tickles a little.
And then we shift scenes back to Asgardia, where we have Freya confronting Odin in the throne room. And, of course, they've gone the way of the movie throne room. They have that the hilt of the sword throne like they had in the movie. And Freya comes bursting into Odin's throne room.
What in the name of all that is holy have you done?
My duty, as all father of Asgard. You would do well to observe and learn, woman.
No, this is madness even for you, husband. Tell me this is not what it appears to be. Tell me the hushed whispers of your guards run true.
And you see that Kul is in here, kind of laying on the floor, asleep, looks like.
Tell me you did not put your murderous, deranged brother in control of the most dangerous weapon known to the gods.
Ah, now we know why he's laying down.
Kul serves my will. Of late, I dare say, he has shown a more competent sense of fealty than you have, Freya. Perhaps you can stand to learn a lesson or two from...
And Freya's not having any of that. She just takes her arm and just backheads Odin across the face with a smack.
You should not have done that, says Odin.
You do not get to say that to me. Not after what you've just done.
I will see that hammer return to Asgard, no matter the cost.
Be careful what you wish for, you one-eyed fool, or you may come to know that hammer in ways that you never imagined.
And we see on one of the cosmic voyeuroscopes, Thor is fighting these Roxxon guys. Very, very sketchy thing. And we cut back to where she is, and she's shouting out,
Dorio Agger, I told you I would be keeping an eye on you. Tell me that is not the stench of Malekith the Accursed that I smell. Whatever dark conspiracy the two of you hope to hatch this day, the Goddess of Thunder swears to you it shall not come to.
And she's interrupted by this giant crewman. Ground is bursting under her feet, and there's like energy blasts coming from underground. And rising up from the island is none other than the Destroyer. To be continued. And that is Thor number 6. And of course, we will have a few things to say about this right after this message.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
You've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Leyland.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
And we're back, and of course we have a few things to say about the issue. First of all, I'm going to start off with the art, because that's the thing that I'm most impressed by in this issue. The artwork in this issue, for the most part, is absolutely phenomenal. It is amazing. It was clear that Russell Dauterman had that issue off and was able to spend more time working on this one. And this one is so incredibly improved as a result of that. Coloring and the layout and all that stuff is brilliant. I still have an issue with the stick-on beards, but I'm willing to overlook that for the way that most of this issue work. The rainbow bridge scenes, the whole scene with Heimdall and his glowy eyes and the rainbow bridge is just awesome. I mean, it just the whole issue looks fantastic. There's no denying Dauterman is a very, very talented artist, and he's got a really good team working with him on it. You know, with including people like Joe Sabino and Matthew Wilson and all these people who are working on him. It's just amazing. It's really, really well done. Story-wise, it's interesting that a lot of these issues really haven't had much of Girl Thor in them at all. And here's another one. Here we don't have a lot of her, and so that's okay. We have a really nice splash here of the bullets bouncing off a Girl Thor, and you're talking about how it tickles. I don't remember Thor being bulletproof, I'll be honest with you. He used to whip his hammer around to deflect the bullets, and it never really was a sense of him being immune to bullets. So I'm not sure how that stands up to past continuity. It's just a question I have. I don't remember Thor being absolutely bulletproof, so it seems a little odd to me, but okay. We'll go with it and just kind of pretend that, he's been invulnerable all along. Or maybe that Girl Thor is actually invulnerable, whereas, Guy Thor isn't. I don't know. So it seemed to be inconsistent to me. This thing with Malekith and Dario Agger is just dragging on and on and on. And I feel the same way about it as I did with the Gore God Butcher thing. It's clear that Jason Aaron loves his villains, and he wants to drag out their story to god-awful lengths, no pun intended. No, just kidding. If I make a pun, it is intended. But it just seems to me that it's gone on too long at this point, and I just want to go somewhere else. It's like, come on, just wrap this up. It's been 6 issues, and you've been dealing with this since the end of Thor: God of Thunder. It's exactly the same plot, and it seems like Malekith just doesn't go the frick away. So, like I said, I'm getting tired of that. But, you know, we do have some stuff coming up anyway, hopefully, and we won't be seeing the two of them nearly as often, hopefully. Though you never know what Jason Aaron I have to say. All right. So with that, it's time to wrap up the show. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. I really do appreciate it. And of course, you can leave us a review on iTunes. You can join us on Twitter. You can send us email. You join us on Facebook. You know, anything to contribute to the show is always greatly appreciated. And with that, we are back over the Bifrost, the Bifrost, back to Midgard. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.